Good nutrition, obviously, is very important for growing bodies. Good feeding helps little kids develop healthy habits and preferences for a lifetime. We'll be talking about that a bit today and about a new book. It's titled Rethinking Nutrition, Connecting Science and Practice in Early Childhood Settings. There are four authors, two of them with me today. Sue Netzke, who's been with us a number of times to talk about nutrition issues. Sue, great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
And also Dave Riley. He's also been with us on many occasions as well. He's UW-Madison Professor of Human Development and Family Studies with UW-Madison and Extension. And Dave, great to have you back as well.
Yeah, thanks, Larry.
Appreciate having you here to talk about nutrition and our early childhood settings, and also to talk about your book, and certainly invite your questions and comments as we move along here today. The number 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Sue, maybe I'll start with you. Why did you put this book together?
Oh, boy. You know, it starts with Dave Riley. He actually is the author of two books in a series that have the same subtitle, Connecting Science and Practice in Early Childhood Settings. And one was about intellectual development and one was about social development. And it came time the publisher said, well, let's do one on nutritional development.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dave called me up and said, hey. And I said, oh, no, Dave, I don't intend to write a book. And then I thought about it and thought, yeah, if not now, when? And not, what's that saying? If not me, then who? And if not now,
sure,
then when? So we talked it over and got our co-author team together, and we did it.
It was perfect for me because Sue and I have worked together for the Extension Service for a long time.
Yeah.
But Sue is also chair of the Nutritional Sciences Department on the Madison campus. I mean, perfect combination of expertise to write a practical book.
And
that was the idea. I mean, the subtitle gives it right there. It half the writing is about what we know from science. Half the writing is about what you can do about it.
Yeah. So it's something that a mom and dad can pick up and take a look at?
I think anyone who has children in daycare might be interested in a lot of what is in this book. The target audience that we had primary in our minds when we wrote the book was childcare providers, preschool teachers, Head Start teachers, administrators of childhood programs, people who are feeding children on a daily basis in a childcare setting of some sort, I think is our primary author. But I have lots of parents already asking me for copies, so I think it would work for them too.
Well, I think so. You think about it, you just tick them off. Daycare, preschool, Head Start, all kinds of ways that our preschool kids are cared for and fed these days, Dave.
Yeah, it's true. Childcare is a normative experience in America today. Most people know. Most parents, whether they're in a one-parent or two-parent household, are employed part-time, at least outside the household. So childcare is a normal setting for being raised, as important as the neighborhood was in the old days. And so what goes on there has a big influence on not only children's health, but also their learning, their behaviors. All of this takes place around meal tables in these childcare settings.
Yeah. And has this been researched? Have you researched the nutrition that goes on in these kinds of settings?
Well, the subtitle of the book is Connecting Science and Practice. So even before the book, of course, this was an area that I was very interested in. And in fact, one of the things that I've been saying over and over again in the nutrition coalitions I'm part of is that it's just super important to have better nutrition in the schools. But waiting until a child is in school, to me, is a big mistake. I think you have to establish expectations of liking good food and expecting to eat good food from the time a child is born. So I've been on this mantra about how don't forget the preschoolers. And then when the opportunity to write this book came along, it was like, okay, let's put it on paper.
What are the mistakes that are commonly made? Too much fast food, too much, or what?
Well, we actually have in our chapters, we have little boxed off areas that give some of this practical advice. And one of those is called mistaken practices.
Oh.
And the mistaken practices that are highlighted in this book, the first one is about regarding feeding as a chore. It's on page 8 if you're looking at the book, Larry. You know, just, and Dave, I think this is one that you wrote about kind of lining up the kids and just looking at feeding as something to get over with.
Yeah, I remember observing a sort of a corporate childcare center here in Madison one time. Very professional looking. It was brand new, glossy surfaces. And they had like 6 kids lined up in high chairs and each one with a little cup and their own little spoon at least. And the childcare teacher was just going down the line, sticking a spoon in each mouth. And it was like a factory, you know. And if you came in naively and looked at the place, you'd say, wow, this place is so professional and efficient and all that. But on the other hand, what we know is that routine biological rhythm times, like changing diapers and feeding and sleeping, these are really essential for forming attachment relationships. And when kids get treated like little objects in a factory line, it's not just not good for them, it's bad for them. And there's much more than that around the mealtime. The mealtime is a ritualized time when we go through the same behaviors together and we learn to share and learn not to act impulsively, learn to talk about our day. And there's really important socialization influences that happen around meals everywhere in the world.
I was just thinking back as you were talking to my our young daughter, Emily, who went to Woodland Montessori School in Madison, and their rituals around eating were very nice. They were shared conversations, and there were expectations about how you ate, and there were little chores that people had to do, but they were always seemed to be viewed as, oh, I get to do this today, or I get to do that today. And so I was always very pleased with that kind of approach.
Well, and kids are fascinated by, you know, where did this food come from? And I think treating it like a chore, as we pointed out in the first chapter of our book, is just a mistake from so many angles that is one of the first ones that showed up. I'll just give you the titles of the other mistaken practices. There's 5 of them. One was overusing prepackaged calorie-rich snacks. I don't think that'll surprise anyone. One is relying on only the familiar and liked foods, the foods that you know kids like and will eat. I think misses an opportunity to expand the familiarity of good, nutritious foods that they've become used to. One is pushing children to clean their plates. I know a lot of us, when we were kids, that was done out of economic necessity. And still in many families and daycare centers, or preschool settings, it's a conundrum about whether it's a good idea. And the research really shows that it's not a good idea, so we talk about that quite a bit. And the final one is using sweet treats as rewards. It's something that happens so often that I think people don't stop to think about all the meanings that we give to treats to kids that we might not even intentionally be trying to convey. But it really is a mistake to constantly reward kids with something sweet to eat, whether they're hungry or not. That's really not a good habit to establish.
Dave Riley and Sue Nitzke, our guests today, they are authors with 2 other folks of the new book just out. It's called Rethinking Nutrition, Connecting Science, Practice, and Early Childhood Settings. And Sue just sort of laid out the prepackaged snacks, the using only familiar foods, the pushing to clean your plate, the sweet treats as rewards. Those are some of the other issues that we haven't discussed yet, and I'd certainly welcome your questions or comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Bob in Claybanks, we'll turn to you. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having the show today, and thanks for letting me talk to your guests so quickly. With the raw milk in the news right now, I'd heard that something happens to the milk fat molecule when you homogenize milk, and also in the way it's homogenized. And I wondered if your food folks know anything about that.
Okay.
Well, it happens to be one of the topics I'm quite passionate about, and I'll try to be civil. Homogenization and pasteurization often are done at the same processing plant when milk is getting ready to be sold. And the pasteurization or lack thereof is what makes milk raw. Or it's unpasteurized milk is what we're talking about. And the pasteurization process is a fairly quick heating and then cooling to get rid of some of the most scary pathogens that might be in the milk. Pathogens meaning nasty germs. So the homogenization process that Bob from Claybanks mentioned is that would be part of the homogen, the making the fat droplets small happens when you homogenize milk. That's what makes it so that the milk is more creamy and the cream doesn't rise to the top. Both of those processes are harmless. The homogenization is just done for pleasantness. It's not a safety issue. The pasteurization is a safety issue, and I made a big deal in the book about how you should never feed raw milk to children, especially in a daycare setting, and I feel quite strongly about that.
Okay, and I don't want to turn this into a raw milk versus
no.
discussion today, so we can kind of leave it at that, but you do discuss that in the book.
I do.
All right, thanks, Bob. Jane in Duluth, Minnesota, let's go on to you. Hi, Jane.
One thing when I was setting up a few child care centers that we did was we just stopped serving juice at snack and lunch. I mean, if the families chose to send in juice boxes, that was fine. But just because of the high sugar content, and also we knew some of the families were putting juice in bottles. So we offered water and milk, and the families were fine with it. And it ended up being a pretty good decision.
Yes, we have advice about that in our book as well. The American Academy of Pediatrics has taken a stand saying that overuse of juice is a mistake for a number of reasons. One is it's just a really easy way to get extra calories and develop that sweet taste that kids become used to. Mm-hmm. Some care settings that I've visited call items that are actually fruit-flavored drinks juice. And then there's the real 100% fruit juice, but it's still sweet and pretty high in sugar. So when you do feed juice to children, I advise that to make sure it's 100% juice. And then according to the Dietary Guidelines for Americans and my pyramid, which I agree with, it's when you have fruit in your menu, make sure it's most often in the form of whole fruit, like fresh apples or canned peaches, something like that. And limit the juice to one serving a day or less.
And we didn't know how much they were getting at home, so we figured if we eliminated it, that would...
That takes care of it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, that does take care of it. Dave, you were going to add something.
Well, Jane brings up an interesting issue, and that is, child care programs, different kids bring different foods in. And we actually have a whole chapter in the book on
that. And we'll talk some more in just a minute here on the Ideas Net. We're rethinking nutrition today, especially in early childhood settings. That's almost the title of the book. The title of the book we're talking about with the two of the authors is Rethinking Nutrition, Connecting Science and Practice in Early Childhood Settings. Our guests, Sue Nitzke, UW-Madison, and Extension Professor of Nutritional Sciences. She chairs that department here on the UW-Madison campus. Dave Riley, UW-Madison professor of Human Development and Family Studies, and also with UW-Madison and UW-Extension. They're two of the authors of Rethinking Nutrition. Great to have them with us. And thank you much for listening in. Zeroing in, as I said, on those the children that before they start school, in part, daycare, looking at preschool, Head Start, those kinds of things. And certainly inviting you to call in with either your experiences or your questions. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Jessica in Milwaukee up with a question. So let's go there. Hi, Jessica.
Hello. I recently saw a wonderful documentary about a Danish preschool where the
And it was a daycare as well, all the way down to only 6-month-olds. But the kids all ate a different porridge every day for lunch, oatmeal one day, millet the next, maybe barley the next. And then on Fridays, they had a wonderful vegetable soup that the older 5- and 6-year-old kids were actually responsible for cutting all the vegetables for. And it was a wonderful ritual around meals. It was a big deal for the 5- or 6-year-olds when they got a knife and were able to use it on Fridays to create the soup. And I was wondering if, one, the guests know of any Wisconsin area schools or preschools that might be using this kind of idea, and then also if this can be sort of an example for how to do some really low-cost, very healthy food that maybe Head Starts or other community daycares might be able to incorporate.
All right. Start with Dave.
Yeah, a lot of early childhood programs in Wisconsin use food as a big part of their curriculum. They have the children helping grow food. Cooking food turns out to be a science project because it's actually chemistry. And having them responsible for their own meals is a good part of learning self responsibility as well. And so I have none to recommend in particular, but a lot of them use food as part of their education, as learning, as training, and learning the different textures of different grains and picking out your favorite and all of that. It just is a wonderful, fun way to make food a good thing.
Sue, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I don't know about the Milwaukee area, but one of our co-authors, Georgine Jacobs, is a preschool teacher here in the Madison area, and it's Kids Express Learning Center. And they have goats, and they have gardens, and they do a lot of what Dave just described, is involving the kids in learning about food, where it comes from, and you know, why it's so important to our lives. It's part of art projects and as Dave mentioned, science and learning basic math concepts. So, yes, I think it's one of the things that I would hope that parents would ask when they're trying to decide where to send their children is, you know, how do you feed my children? How do you decide what to feed them? And what's your style? Do you have family style meals? Do you hold the babies when they're being fed? Those kinds of things so that you can actually get a feel for whether they take nutrition for granted as something to just, you know, like a service to provide, or if they really take it seriously as part of helping the developing child learn about food.
I kind of like the idea of something different every day, as Jessica was talking about here, because I do think if we zero in on peanut butter sandwiches every day of the week, or foods that kids seem to really like and enjoy, that then that kind of, I would guess, limit them down the road. I know our daughter Emily, I mean, she, when she was 3, she loved she learned to love calamari.
Wow.
So we tried, and of course we're not a family that eats calamari every day, but when we were out dining, we just gave her some, and she liked it, and I think it's a good practice to try and broaden their eating experiences.
You know, the early childhood years are years when we emphasize that children learn to perceive things more carefully and more finely. So good early childhood programs will have like a selection of 10 slight pieces of sandpaper, and the kids have to line them up from finest to coarsest, or they'll have a series of bells, and the children have to listen, and they have to get them lined up from highest to lowest pitch. And because perception is the basis of thinking, of intellectual development, and these are the ages where we're forcing them to pay attention to things. You can do the same thing with 6 different types of apple slices and have them pick out their favorites, and it's forcing them to pay attention to the world around them.
Yeah. And for somebody like Jessica, though, what's the process? Now, she'd like to know what in the Milwaukee area. How would you go about searching to find the places that might be practicing what you were talking about?
When my kids were little, I actually called my friends at the Department of Public Instruction who work with the Child and Adult Care Food Program. Many care providers and preschools take part in a program, especially if they have low-income children, where there are government subsidies for providing nutritious foods, and that's administered from the Department of Public Instruction. And there are groups in the community that also help with that. The one I know of in Madison is 4Cs. That stands for Community Coordinated Childcare.
Okay.
And they actually provide some training in nutrition for the child care centers and food programs that are eligible. Also, many Head Start programs actually take nutrition very seriously, and they are required to serve fairly nutritious meals as part of their sort of charter. So I think there are lots of resources in the community. If you contact the right people, you could learn a lot about which are the places that have this kind of philosophy.
And you should always ask if they have food policies in any program you go to. Good programs have to have food policies. Some families, for cultural or health reasons, might be vegetarian. Some children might have food allergies. Some parents might want to send candies in their child's bag lunch. Is that okay? For all these reasons, it's going to be chaos if you don't have policies. And so asking that question ought to be number one, and you'll learn from that how thoughtful their policies are if you ask.
We make a big point in our book in advising the care providers on the importance of policies and how to set them up in a way that involves the parents and really considers all of the sensitivities and the cultural differences and so forth. So I think, as Dave mentioned, looking for a place that has thought through what are our policies and involved parents in that process is a good sign.
Thanks again, Jessica, for that call. By the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 with your question or comment. I'd love to hear from you. David in Viroqua, we turn to you next. Hi, David.
Hi. I think one of the best things when our kids were really little, even before they would have gone off to daycare or anything, was to start make sure their first foods were vegetables and not fruits, not let them get that start off at the sweet end. For example, when our kids, like when they first started teething, their first thing that they got was a green bean out of the garden. They just wrapped their little fists around it and just gnaw away. And our kids were always great about eating all kinds of foods because you weren't trying to force them to go from sweet fruits to, you know, the more savory vegetables.
Yeah.
Right. I had a similar philosophy with my kids when they were teething. I didn't use the biscuit type cookies that have sugar in them. I used either a toasted sort of crusty bagel or something that wouldn't just keep feeding a child sweets when the purpose wasn't for something to eat when you're hungry. I think Dave in Viroqua has the right idea.
And I just want to say Dave in Viroqua is a good writer. Let me quote, wrap their little fists around it and gnaw away. There's an image I want to keep in my mind. That's wonderful.
Thanks, David. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And we'll take some more calls here. Before we do that, I wanted to comment on one of the other areas, and we've talked about this in the past, Sue and I have, on pushing to clean plates. That's something we don't do in our home, even though sometimes it seems as though daughter Emily, I'd like her to eat more than she's eating, but they do some self-regulating anyway, don't they, Dave?
They absolutely do, but Sue is the one that we ought to ask this question of on feeding behavior.
We actually have a practice tip in our book.
And
it's called Encouraging Autonomy Without Wasting Food. Because that's really the issue here. If you give a child a certain amount of food to eat and then let them eat what they want and let them leave what they want, there you are with all kinds of food to throw away. And even if you can afford it, it doesn't feel right. So we have some advice and some tips. As we mentioned, two of our co-authors work with children in early childhood settings on a more routine basis, and one is actually a preschool teacher. So they helped us keep real about these subjects and not just pontificate too much. So I think you'll find that with a little thought and starting with just very small portions and having everybody understand they can ask for more until they don't want any more, until they're not hungry anymore, is a way to help deal with this. And also encouraging the children to serve themselves, and while they're doing that, to really do that in a way that starts with how much they think they're hungry for, knowing they can have more if they need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the big problems is serving yourself is a lot of fun. And so kids, they like the whole activity of moving stuff from the big plate to their plate. So yeah, as a tip, have them start by serving themselves a little. And then if they finish that, they can have more.
All right. Carolyn in Milwaukee will move on to you now. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I'm so glad I got through. We have our daughter who just turned 4 in a program called Lifeways, and it's she just goes 2 mornings a week, and it's related to the Waldorf School philosophy in that they create a very home-like environment. The one my daughter goes to is actually in a woman's home, but they also have them in a more traditional
mm-hmm.
childcare environment. But anyways, the philosophy is very home-like, and it relates to that caller who called in about the Denmark documentary that she saw, where the meal times are very family style, and they do they make a millet porridge, let's say every Wednesday, oatmeal every Tuesday, soup every Thursday. It's a routine and rhythm to the week regarding all aspects of the day, but especially the mealtime. And it's served family style, all organic ingredients. The children help prepare the food as well as clean up, and they all eat the meal at the child care as opposed to bringing their own lunch, which is wonderful to promote trying new things and, you know, the peer pressure, quote unquote, of trying something new because your friend did. And it's just wonderful. They pack in the vegetables and some fruits, and just the overall philosophy in general is very very developmentally appropriate and family oriented, etc. So I just wanted to throw that name out there, Lifeways and Waldorf, if anyone's interested in just Googling that, because there are some programs in the Milwaukee area as well as the Madison area that I do know of.
Thank you, Carolyn, for calling. Let's get some comments from Dave Riley first.
Yeah, nice advertisement for a program that you like. I like that. Family-style mealtime is recommended. For example, all Head Start programs have that as a common part of what they do, and that's part of most good programs. And actually, family mealtime is an expectation in every culture that we've studied in the world as well. And across the cultural groups in the U.S., not all of us have time for a family mealtime, but we all have the expectation that people ought to sit down together, that you ought to have a pause in the day, there's conversation among people. What's interesting about this, one thing for me, is that we know that the amount that parents talk with young children correlates with how the children's vocabulary grows. And when there's more conversations, children's vocabulary, that link between conversation and vocabulary growth is stronger for mealtime conversations than other parts of the day. We don't know exactly why, but it could be something about the fact that it's a ritualized, every day, same time, same place, the expectation of common conversation. It's a time when children do a lot of learning. There's all kinds of good reasons that we ought to be thinking about family mealtime, both in our families and in our childcare programs being an important institution.
Yeah.
And she mentioned rhythms and this sort of, Dave mentioned rituals, these sort of dependable things that I think make mealtime feel like a comfortable occasion. I think it's probably a coincidence, but the fact that nourishing and nurturing are so closely, you know, the words are so much alike, I think really has a lesson there. And I'll even point out that in our book, we have a section that talks about the pros and cons of family meal styles versus teacher-served meals versus having the parents send the food for the children. There are some very good care settings that do all three of those models. And the ones, my personal preference is whenever they can to have family style. But if it can't be done in this sort of nurturing atmosphere that Dave just described, that that same kind of nurturing can be accomplished in these other settings as well. And we did work very carefully to address that because I think it is a consideration that many parents are interested in and another one of these policies that they might want to check out when they're deciding a care setting for their child.
Nick in Green Bay, let's turn to you now. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I've got a 14-month baby, and she will not eat. I mean, we'll try everything. The only thing she loves is bread. That's it, bread, water, milk. Doctor last week, and she lost a pound, and the doctor said she's completely healthy, but she's a very, very picky eater. And what, I don't know what to do to get her to eat.
What did your doctor say to do?
Nothing. He said that she's completely fine, not to worry about it.
Well, I think your doctor is probably pretty well informed. I mean, there's exceptions to every rule, but one of the things that we see over and over again is in the second year of life, so you're starting to notice it about now, you said your baby's 14 months. They're still growing rapidly, but compared to their size, they're not growing as fast as they were during that first year of life, and it suddenly seems like they're eating like a bird. And if you try to get them to eat and put food in their mouth or in front of them when they're not hungry or not in the mood to eat, then it starts setting up all kinds of power struggles and becomes more of an issue than it needs to be. So working very closely with your doctor is, of course, what we advise, and monitoring that there's not some sort of troubling weight loss. And then just really let the child's hunger be the guide. And if she doesn't eat anything but bread for a week or two, make sure it's nutritious bread, and that I assume she'll have some kind of milk that kind of thing to go with it. And I 9 times out of 10, that'll be the best action for you.
And we kind of tricked her in this morning because she wouldn't eat her pancakes, so we gave her like one of her choice forks, and she just then that was great to eat. I mean,
good thinking. You know, what I learned from Sue is that, you know, our job is to present a variety of nutritious foods in a pleasant way, and it's the kids' job to decide which one of them and how much to eat.
Yeah.
Yes, Ellen Satter here in Madison is nationally and internationally known as an expert on how to feed children in a way that addresses these kinds of issues. And she actually has a set of rules about just the younger they are, the more it's your responsibility to make sure there's good food in front of them. But at any age, how much they eat has to be up to them, because if you try to change what they're hungry for, it'll work now and then, but in the long run, it won't pay off. No,
it will work against you. Thanks, Nick, for calling. Appreciate it. Good luck with that 14-month-old. Let's go to Anita in Delafield. Anita, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I actually was calling to respond to one of the earlier callers, Jessica, to let her know that if she wants to check into a Waldorf program, they actually have a lot of them start with 3-year-old programs, and they have kindergartens where they do the millet porridge one day, and then the children prepare a vegetable soup on one of the days of the week. And so if she's looking for that type of program, actually you can find it right here in Wisconsin if you look at one of your Waldorf schools. And there are several in the Milwaukee area, and my son actually is in a kindergarten and has really enjoyed participating in preparing food and has learned to know what millet porridge tastes like and other very healthy foods. So, and the children love to sit down together, and they have cloth napkins and light a candle and learn to listen to each other's stories at the table. So I can't say enough about what it does to set the groundwork for excellent food education in our children. So I just wanted to let you know that that's out there.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Any comments?
It's good news.
Yeah, it's good. It is. Sue?
Right. I mean, there's many styles, and this one seems to be appealing to several of your callers, and I don't see anything wrong with it. And there are other styles of feeding children that will also be attractive to other parents. So, you know, it becomes a bit of an investigation. And new parents, boy, they have so many decisions to make about how they're going to take care of the child, and everything from how they're ever going to get some sleep again to, and, you know, managing work and family. Dave and I both work with Extension, and so many of our educational programs for people in the community are balancing work and family. You know, we have so many ties and on our time. So finding a place where you're comfortable, that your children are learning what you want them to learn, and a style that feels comfortable, and eating what you'd like them to eat, it can be a challenge, especially in some rural areas where there aren't that many choices. And whether you're going to put them in a center or a family provided care setting, or something that your company might provide. Those are all big choices to make. So I'm glad to hear the callers taking such an interest in the different styles that are available.
And your book, then, Sue and Dave, I guess helps those who are parents, but also though, especially those who are in home care kinds of situations or Head Start situations or preschool situations to develop a good nutrition program for their
yes,
kids.
Yes, in fact, we have extensive appendixes that give examples of balanced meal menu plans and suggestions for where they can find more, and explains the requirements of the child and adult care food program, gives sort of really kind of practical tips for making this work in a setting where there's so much to handle, and you have to think about, you know, make sure you don't have any choking hazards and everything's safe to eat. And one of the callers mentioned organics and whether or not you're going to go that way and how that's going to influence your policy. There's lots to decide.
Lots to decide, and lots covered. That is covered in the book Rethinking Nutrition, Connecting Science and Practice in Early Childhood Settings. It's just out. It's published by Red Leaf Press. And so I think we can get copies right now, as a matter of fact, but just hot off the press. And thanks to Sue Nitzke and Dave Riley for being with us today and talking about it. And thank you for listening here on the Ideas Network.